Hey guys, my name's Kyle. I'm a drug addict.
Hey Kyle.
All right. I've also been the scheduling chair for this committee, and I just want to say it's been really cool to have everybody here and everybody here throughout the day and everybody that showed up last night. I know we all really appreciate it quite a bit. I just want to say it was mentioned a few times. Sean mentioned it also, like some of the quarrels that happened over the past year that we've been working on putting this together. It's been a really interesting thing to be a part of. So I've spent like probably close to the last 6 months putting this schedule together. I took the position and was thinking like, oh, well, it's just the schedule. I know it's important, but it's not a giant deal. And then I started making the schedule and starting to get the speakers arranged and starting to get the speakers in place and the topics and just kind of the format of the entire conference. And I realized it was a lot of work. And even still, right up to this moment, we are not on track with the time at this point. So whatever itineraries you guys have, follow them loosely. The good thing is that we have the venue here a little bit later tonight than we actually planned on having it, so we don't have to be in a huge rush to get everything through. So again, I appreciate everybody that's here, and also everybody else on the committee that's helped put this together. So with that being said, before I introduce our next speaker, I want to preface it by saying that there is a spiritual retreat that a good handful of us go up to in South Carolina every year in October and also in April. It's every 6 months. And I started to see this gentleman around a little bit up on the mountaintop. He's an Ocala boy from here from Stewart, though. And I started to see this guy up on the mountain up in South Carolina over the past few years that I've been going up there. I didn't really know him, though. And very recently, probably, I don't know, May, maybe end of May, something like that, beginning of June, I had the opportunity to do some actual real-deal 12-step work with this guy. I had driven up to Ocala to take care of it, and, it's not a short drive from here, but, what are we willing to do? So I got the opportunity to really, spend some time with this dude and hang out and, like I said, take care of some real-deal 12-step work. And, we were hanging out at his house, and I asked him, I was like, hey, man, we have this DAA conference coming up. It's in September. What do you think about coming down to speak, though? And immediately it was, yeah, man, absolutely. Let me know a time and a date. That's the kind of stuff that I like to see. That's the kind of stuff that I like to see in our speakers. Every speaker that we've had today is phenomenal. We still have a really good lineup for the rest of the evening here. So, without further ado, I'll give you guys Joe B.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic and drug addict. I say recovered, right? Had a hard time with people saying that for a long time, right? But when I read the book, what it said is we first 100 have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that's where I'm at today. And I've had some severe injuries in my life over this time in my recovery. And what I found out, even with injuries, there's a time of recovery and there's a time that I have recovered, right? And that's contingent on the basis of what I do. I'm given a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual conditioning that requires maintenance. That being said, I'm Joe. I'm here from this area, born in West Palm Beach, Florida. Grew up around here. Grew up in Stewart, Hope Sound, Martin County area. Basically, the literature that's written, I'm not unique. I'm a miracle, but so is every single other person sitting in this audience right now. If you've got 24 hours and you were addicted to drugs or alcohol, then you know what a miracle it is just to get those first 24 hours. And that's whether it was in a detox or a rehab or whether it was sitting on someone's couch or wherever you were. My story is unique to me, but it's not unique. When I was growing up, just a little bit, about my alcoholism, long before I ever took a drink or a drug, as I was growing up, I always felt uncomfortable. I'm sure you guys have heard many people say that when they tell their story. Man, I was uncomfortable growing up. I didn't feel like I fit in. So I went above and beyond to fit in wherever I went. You know, and that was a recurring story with me growing up. I grew up in a good home. I did have some horrible things happen to me that should never happen to any child growing up. You know, but I found out later on recovery, it's not the things that happened to me that made me a drug addict or an alcoholic. It's the way that I dealt with it. Because I know many, many successful people that are not drug addicts and are not alcoholics and have been through the exact same things that I've been through. Right? But it's the way that Joe chose to deal with those things. That was my relief. So that uncomfortability with me, you know, it kind of, as I grew, it kind of grew too. You know, and I got into my teenage years and I got into middle school and, you know, I had gone to private schools most of my life. And then my parents put me in the into the public school sector, and man, kids were mean. Ooh, man, shit. I was like, man, you know, I was raised turn the other cheek and be nice to everybody, and you know, I thought that's just how the world was. And man, I got out into public school at 12 years old, and kids were just mean. They called you names, they picked on you. I was a little guy, you know, they called me a shrimp and preacher's kid and picked on me, and that just made that feeling I had inside even worse. You know, and the things that happened to me created a lot of anger as a kid, you know. When I was a kid, a lot of that stuff was justified. I was a kid. You know, I didn't have a choice in what happened to me. I didn't have a choice in the way I processed those things. I didn't have a choice in the way I dealt with it. You know, but when I became 18, I became a man, and I had a choice to learn how to start to deal with those things. And the way I dealt with it was to drug and drink. I remember specifically the very first time I didn't try a drug first. You know, I tried alcohol first. I was probably 13 years old, and there was a group of kids in the summertime that would always be down at the beach, and they were always down there, you know, having a good time, and I'd be with my cousin, and we'd sit back and watch them down there having a fire on the beach. And man, I wanted to go over there and hang out with those kids so bad. I wanted to be part of that cool crowd, right? But that insecurity that I had just kept me just from a distance watching. And one day me and my cousin got a hold of some beer, and we hit it on the beach, by the way, which is not a good idea to stick beer in the sand all day long on the beach, drink it later. But I did it, you know. And I didn't know this then, but I know this now, so that becomes part of my story as I took this journey to find out about myself. What happened was, immediately, I went over to this party and I acted like an idiot, just like every time I ever drank or got high, I acted like an idiot, right? But what happened was those voices that were in my head ever since I was a kid that told me I wasn't big enough, I wasn't tall enough, I didn't look good, you know, there's something wrong with me, you don't fit in, they won't like you, they're going to reject you, all these voices that wound around in my head since I was a kid, they went away. You know, like I said, I couldn't understand that then. I just knew that whatever it was, man, I liked it, right? And that night, I blacked out. I puked. I blacked out. I woke up in a bathtub, and that started a pattern of my life from the age of 13 on. probably around, I think I was like 17, you know, I would have these patterns of getting too drunk, and then I would realize I was too drunk, and then I would go try to hide so people didn't beat me up, because I tended to have a big mouth when I was drunk and be places that I didn't belong, right? So I didn't like getting beat up, and I knew if I was too drunk that there was no chance in even fighting back. So I would go find these places to hide and try to sleep it off. Well, that happened one night at a party, and I woke up in the hospital. You know, some guys got a hold of me, and they nearly beat me to death. And I said way back then at 17, I said, you know, this drinking thing, it's not, you know, like this is bad. You know, it's like I know I got a problem with it because I never know what's going to happen. So what I did was I decided to pick up some other stuff. I decided to pick up, you know, marijuana. And from there, you know, as I'm sure everyone sitting here can relate to, it progressed. It went from that to the age of 20. You know, trying cocaine. And man, I thought, when I found that, boy, I had arrived, right? And I never understood, like, I sold drugs most of my life, by the way, too, because that was another way that allowed me to fit in. It wasn't because I came from an underprivileged family. It wasn't because I had to do it. I didn't have to do it to survive. Now, back then, I would have told you I did. I tried to portray myself as the victim, that I needed to do all this to be okay. But the truth was, as I've taken the journey to find out about Joe, the truth was, I did all that stuff to fit in. I did all that stuff because it made me important. I did all that stuff because it gave me a degree of control over other people. Right? But I had no idea back then that's what I was doing. Anyways, I would sit back and I would sell drugs to people, man, and I would make fun of them. Man, dude, look at that guy. He's so pathetic. Man, this girl's so pathetic. Man, they bring me. Oh, look at what they're doing, man. Their kids are at home. And I'd sit back, man, and I specifically remember, you know, times sitting on my couch and judging people that were my friends, right, while I'm giving it to them. You know, I'm the one contributing to the problem that they have, but I'm okay with that because I'm getting a dollar bill from it. You know, later on in life, as my addiction began to grow and I got into other things and I found out what physical, not just mental addiction, I found out what physical addiction was. I found out what it was to be a prisoner of drugs and alcohol. Not just a lifestyle, but a prisoner, where I was a slave. You know, I became every single thing that I hated, you know. And I did that stuff for many years, over and over. My journey in recovery started in 2001. I'll just give you a brief overview. You know, I woke up in Palm Beach County Jail. I was facing 3 life sentences. I had no bond. I had $700,000 in a bank account at the age of 27. Right? And I couldn't use a penny of it. I couldn't do anything. And I said to myself, you know, I think I might. There just might be a problem here. You guys can relate to that? Yeah. Yeah, I might have a problem. You know what I mean? And I said, you know, but it's not a problem that money can't solve, right? I got plenty of money, so I'll get the right lawyers and I'll get the right attorneys. You know, and something along in there, you know, I had this thing, right, going on ever since I was a kid. And I would just like to say that I'm not a overly religious person, but I devoutly believe in my higher power, because that is the only reason that I'm standing here right now telling you guys this story. You know, so many things have happened to me from that point, but I'm going to try to walk you guys through those. And, you know, anyways, I was sitting in there and I threw a bunch of money at attorneys, and you know, 9 months later I got a $1 million bond, and you know, this is all legit stuff, man. I walk out and I wasn't out for 3 days and I overdosed. You know, and you know, I ran to the whole church thing, and you know, I had this problem with God growing up. And see, what I thought was that God loved all you guys, right? Because I knew he was real. I never had a problem believing in God or the God idea. I just believed he loved everyone else in the world but me. And I believed that, you know, he would help everyone else in this world but me. So having that problem, right, and trying to get sober, that's a big problem, was a big problem for me. Because it wasn't a lack of belief, it was an overbelief in something that was not going to help me get where I needed to go. Anyways, I ended up getting a 10-year split sentence off of that very first time, and I went to prison, and I dove into substance abuse 1 and substance abuse 2, and I thought that, you know, if I just got educated enough and I found out why I did this, and you know, that I would never have to do it again, right? Because, you know, I'm not a stupid, none of us are stupid. I think the book says that we're all over, like, kind of overly above what the average person is when it comes to work or anything else. My problem, I was always too smart for my own good. You know, so I dove into all this stuff, and about a year in, man, I was so uncomfortable. And I went to this guy that he was so relatable, you know. I didn't know what about him was relatable. It was this old guy, his name was Mr. Tooker. He had white hair. He was a really cool old guy, and he taught this class about, you know, substance abuse. And something about him was just, you know, relatable. And I went to him, and I said, man, dude, this sucks. I feel worse right now than I ever did when I was using. And, you know, in my mind, that was real, right? Because, I tend to forget how bad it was. You know, and he said, hey, you know, there's this little thing called AA, and, you know, they have a meeting here once a week, and it's in this building, and, you know, you might want to try it. And so I tried it out, and, man, it was cool. First meeting I went to, I started talking, and the guy chairing the meeting that came in from the outside, he's like, hey, shut up. What? You know, the only reason you're talking to me like that is because I'm wearing blue and you're sitting over there. You wouldn't be talking to me like that. You know, I got all offended, but you know, that was my entrance into recovery, right? And I learned a lot intellectually, you know, and I got real religious, you know. I like to call it emotionalism. You know, I got real emotional. And if you had told me back then, and there's some guys in here that know me, if you had told me back then that I was ever going to use or sell drugs again or do anything like that, I actually physically would have fought you, given the opportunity. Because I was thoroughly convinced with my ego that I was never going to do that stuff again. Because my head was packed with all this knowledge, and I knew what I had done wrong, and I knew all about this stuff, and there was nothing you guys were going to tell me that was going to help me, because I had it all right here. And me and God, we were going to take care of things. Okay? And I truly believed that. You know, sadly, about 4 months after I got out of prison, I woke up and I found myself in the same place that I was before I went to prison, only worse, except for now I got a 25-year suspended sentence. I've got 7 years of probation. I've got 8 ounces of cocaine sitting in my bedroom dresser drawer and going, how the hell did I get here? I just had almost 4 years without putting a substance in my body. And all of a sudden, I wake up here and I'm right back where I was. How the hell did I get here? It's not possible. Well, the literature in the book talks about self-knowledge only avails us so far. It'll only take us so far. I believe that's in the second and third chapter. You know, I'm not like the big book guru. Now, believe me, I know what's in there. And if somebody needs help, I can take you through this 12 steps right here. That's what I can do for you. I can't do anything else. I can't introduce you to God. I can't get you sober. I can't be your banker. Maybe if you're willing to work, I can give you a job. But I even learned about doing that. It's kind of like a conflict of interest. Because I also found out over the years I'm kind of codependent. You know? Yeah. Yeah, I got a deep, deep compassion, man, for drug addicts and alcoholics, man, because of the way that I suffered. Guys, I suffered. I suffered, man. And anyways, once I went back out that last time, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. My buddy Dustin here, man, he used to run the streets with me, and I was sober, and I had a business. You know, and the program always gave me what I wanted. I like what the speaker said earlier. You know, I came in here for all these other reasons, right? My business was going down the tube, so I needed to come in and straighten up so that I could straighten things out and keep things on track. My old lady was on my back, right? And if I didn't, you know, clean things up a little bit, I was going to lose my family. My mom and dad were going to call my parole officer, and if I didn't, you know, go play the role for a little while, I was going to go back to prison, you know? And for the next 6.5 years, I came in and out and in and out of the program. Now, you know, I went into Alcoholics Anonymous, but this 12-step program right here, whatever title you put in front of it, that's a design for living. It's not something I learned. It's not something that I intellectually do one time. It's not something that when I sit down and I do that, it's going to fix me. Because, man, let me tell y'all, my thinking, like I told you, from the time I was young, my perception of reality before I ever put drugs or alcohol in my body was screwed up, man. You know, and what this did was it gave me an outline of how to begin to process things in my head differently. Because my eyes and my heart are telling me one thing. You know, my eyes and my heart are telling me one thing. My emotions are telling me something else. And this gives me a way to sit down and write that stuff out and process it and trust another human being and run it by that human being to find out how far off track I am. And then it's my choice. I don't have to take what they say as 100%, but what I can take it as a different outlook on what's going on in my life, what's going on in my head. So after 6.5 years of being out there ripping and running, and you know, I just, you know, I've heard it said many times before, I just had enough. You know, I was living in a trap house in Port Salerno. You know, it was off Kingfish Avenue. It was just a nasty, fallen in the ground hole, and that's where my life had went. I went from this guy that you know, was doing all these big things in the nightclubs and running things up and down and getting in boats. And I went from that guy to the guy way down here living in a dope hole, selling crap out of my window at night just so I could get up in the morning. You know, and I woke up one day and, you know it was my higher power. I just had enough. And I was either going to kill myself that day or I was going to give this thing one more try. And I heard a guy talk about New Horizons. That's where I went. And I had been there already twice in that month. They knew me by name, you know, and they made me sit in the parking lot. They're like, you know, well, we got a bed. And then they're like, oh, well, we had a bed, but we might not have a bed. And they wanted to see how bad I wanted to get in. And I left that parking lot and I went and overdosed, you know. And when I come out of that, you know, and there's a difference. There's different overdoses. You can overdose on cocaine and you can overdose on opiates. Well, I overdosed on cocaine, and that is a very, very horrible experience. It's happened to me more than once. It's a very terrible experience because you do remember a lot of it, unlike the other, which I've overdosed on as well. And when I came out of it, I called back to New Horizons in a panic, and I just said, please, I'm going to die. I told you guys earlier today, I'm going to die. And see, I wanted to die, but I was scared to live, and I was scared to die, but I wanted to die, but I didn't want to live. I didn't know what the hell I wanted. I was just a complete broken shell of a human being that knew no other way but than to just exist by numbing my existence out. Numbing my existence out. Every day I numb my existence out, man. And I was just tired of it. And I went in there and I didn't think this thing was going to work. You know, I have been in and out a long time. I ended up staying in there for 10 days. And this nurse kept telling me the same thing over and over. She says, Joe, you've been here at that times. You've left here and you've gone to church. You've left here and you've gone and seen your family. You've left here and you've gone and done this. And she went through the whole long list of things that I did when I came there and I detoxed and I left there and I went and did something other than what they told me to do. I never did what they told me to do. I always did something else because, see, Joe had all these great ideas. And until I ran out of ideas, what I know now, I didn't know this then. Until I ran out of ideas, I was going to keep playing the lotto with my ideas. Oh, this one's going to work. Oh, man. I'm going to throw another $20. This one's going to work. Oh, man. You know, and I ran out of ideas, and she kept telling me, Joe, you need to leave here and go directly to a meeting. Joe, you need to, every day for 10 days, Joe, you need to leave here and go directly to a meeting. You know, and I got out of there, and I had driven myself there, which was a miracle because I stayed. You know, that's that just getting there. You know, this all has to do, not with me, guys. This has to do with a higher power that I didn't even think loved me, that I didn't think cared about me, who was guiding me and directing me and keeping me safe and getting me where I needed to go and getting me back to a place where someone could guide me and help me straighten out my thinking in the way that I saw things. And I'll never forget, you know, I was going over the Roosevelt Bridge. It was the old clubhouse. And I was leaving there, and man, the thought came, yeah, don't, just listen, look at you. I had scabs, guys, I had scabs all over me. I was a picker. All over my face, all over my arms, on my stomach, my legs. Looked like someone had taken a cigarette and burnt me everywhere. And the voice came back in my head, oh man, just go get high one more time. You can go to this meeting afterwards. Look at the way you look. What are people going to think of you? You know, and I'm telling you, I don't know if it was the first time in my life, but for the first time I remember, I did something opposite than what I wanted to do. I got to that light at the bottom of the bridge, and I made a left. And I was coming from New Horizons. I made a left, and I went to AA, you know, because that's the only place I knew to go where this program was taught. I had been in and out, right? And I walked in there, and I remember walking in and looking around, and people had on nice shoes. They were kind of dressed like Sean. They had on button-down shirts and ties, and, man, I thought they had, like, Rolex watches on and alligator skin shoes. And I'm looking at these people going, man, I got burn holes all in my clothes, scabs all over me. I'm like, oh, man, these people can't help me. Man, these people are talking about alcohol, man. I'm a burned out dope dealer hooked on his own shit. These people can't help me, man. You know, and that's those voices that have been talking to me since I was a little kid. You know, those are those voices, man, that this program right here helps me keep in check as long as I'm willing to live it. And I remember sitting in there, man, and I couldn't tell you. There was a speaker, and it, everything back then sounded like blah, 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 alcohol, blah, 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 you need to, blah, 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 you need to, and by the way, you must and you will or you'll die, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's what it sounded like to me, right? I'm like, I'm sitting back there shaking, you know, like, oh, God, I just want to get out of here, you know. And I couldn't tell you what the guy said. I just know everybody looked like rich people to me, and I was thinking about robbing them all, but it was probably a bad idea too, you know, at that point. So I sat back there, and I remember the meeting ended, right? And I'm the type of guy, as you can see, once I get going, I like to talk, you know. I'm pretty easy going. I'm a type A personality. I'll talk to anyone. But, man, I'm sitting in the back, and I do not want to talk. Usually, man, for them 6 years prior, I went in there, man, I was blah, 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 blah. They'll be like, shut up, Joe. No, for real. Back then, they used to tell you, shut up, man. Shut up. We've heard enough from you. Oh, I'd get offended. You know, my poor little feelings. Right? I see some of y'all can relate to that. Yeah. Anyways, you know, I sat back there. I didn't want to say a word. There was something in me, I just didn't want to talk. And I know that you know, I've learned to identify those voices, the ones that tell me the opposite of what I'm supposed to be doing, and the ones that just, you know, tell me I don't belong and all that stuff. And for whatever reason, and this, again, guys, this is my higher power. The one that I didn't believe in, by the way, the one that I actually would say that I hated, for various reasons. I don't have enough time to get into the entire story, but I'm going to give you guys whatever my higher power chooses to bring out. But I sat back there, man, and they got ready to say the prayer. You know, everybody gets up and holds hands and chants and all that stuff. And back then, that's what it seemed like to me. And they said something, and I just shot my hand up in the air, man. My ears were burning. I never had an experience like that before. My ears were burning. I was sweating. I'm like, oh, man, what part of detox is this? This is horrible. Right? And I'm like sweating, and I raise my hand. I had no idea what was going to come out of my mouth, right? But it just came out. I just said, my name's Joe, and you know, I just left detox. If somebody doesn't help me, I just started bawling, crying. I'm going to die. I'm going to leave here and die. And then I put my head down because I was so embarrassed. Because, no offense, guys, but when we cry, it's ugly. You know, like, oh, God, people are going to see me, you know? I put my head down, and one of the first things that happened is, you know, there was a guy that was always in the rooms, right? And he always had a different face, and he would always say the same thing. I raised my hand and said I needed help, and everybody surrounded me, and I picked up one white chip, and I've been sober ever since. I hated that guy. Oh, man. He was at every meeting, you know? I'm like, oh, I hate this guy. I raised my hand, and people don't even want to talk to me. I mean, probably because I was high as a kite, but, you know. You know, people are like, hey, go the other way, right? But something happened, man. I put my head down, I was crying, and I waited, and I thought I seen all the feet leave the door, you know. I was there in the back by the old clubhouse there, and I'm watching the back door. I'm over at the last table, and I'm watching, making sure everybody was gone before I lifted my head up, man. And when I lifted my head up, there was probably, you know, maybe 8-10 guys standing around that table. And I said, oh, hey, man, we got somewhere to be. I was like, no, good, we weren't going to let you leave anyway. Oh, shit. You know, and then it started, you know. You got, I heard Sean talking about, you got the bleeding deacons, you got the preachers, you got the teachers, and then you got the guys that live it. So then it started, are you ready to be divorced from drugs and alcohol? I don't know, man. I just don't want to drink today, dude. I don't want to die. Oh, you got to give it all up. Oh, you know, I'm like, dude, I'm overwhelmed. And then you got the guys telling that guy to shut up, you know. It's going to be okay, guy. And I'm like, oh. But you know what happened? That moment happened. I became that guy, right? I became that guy that people surrounded, and I needed that at that moment. My higher power knew what I needed at that moment, and at that point, dude, it had been 10 years. of me trying to come in and out of this thing. I still didn't know if it was going to work or not. I just knew that I had a lot of information in my head, and I know that I had put this thing together how I wanted to put it together for 10 years. I had worked the steps on my own. You know, I was my own sponsor. Or I would get a sponsor and tell him that I did what he told me to do, and no way in hell I was going to do whatever it was that I didn't want to do. So I just did the parts of it that I wanted to do. And for me, that didn't work. You know, and but I decided, you know, I was going to do what that lady told me to do. I was going to go to a meeting, and I was going to go to as many as I could. And I didn't have a job, and I was unemployable, and I looked like shit. And I was scared to death. I was scared to death that it wasn't going to work for me. And so, you know, I started coming every day to that hall. You know, people had seen me coming around for years. So it wasn't like immediately everybody was going to be like, oh, hey, welcome, guy. You know, I was the guy that kind of came in and took whatever he could and then left. So, you know, you kind of build a reputation. But see, nobody ever threw me out. Nobody ever told me I couldn't come back. A matter of fact, I thought it was an insult, but people kept saying, hey, keep coming back. Ugh. Telling me that, that's an insult, dude. You're talking to me like I'm a newcomer, man. I've been around 10 years. I know more than you do. You know, whatever. But I kept coming back, and there was this guy, right? He came out here earlier. I just say his name's Jimmy. You know, he came out here earlier. He came to see me before I came in here and spoke. And I thank God for that guy, man. Because when that guy would talk to me, dude, I swear to God, it was like nails on a chalkboard. That guy would walk up and go, hey, you got a sponsor yet? Yeah, man, I've got three. That's bullshit, man. You got three because you manipulate people and you pick what you want to hear. And I'm like, oh, dude, chill out, man. Like I don't like the word sponsor. You know, I had all these great answers. But, like, I'm coming to meetings. Isn't it enough? And every day he'd walk up to me and go, you got a sponsor yet? And I'm like, man, oh, dude, this dude, leave me alone, bro. Right? Like, I got six sponsors now. Isn't that enough? Right? Dude, I've done five meetings today, man. I'm the poster child of AA. Leave me alone. And then he would keep coming back to me every day at the 4 o'clock meeting saying the same thing. You got a sponsor yet? Well, something happened, you know, and it's how my higher power has worked my entire sobriety. Something happened. I had a truck whenever by miraculous, I still had something left. You know, my clothes all had cigarette burns in them, but I had something left. I had a truck. Right? And about 2 weeks in, I go out to my truck one morning, and of course, I'm Captain AA, so I'm driving around picking everybody up for meetings, doing like five meetings a day, right? Because, like, I'm going to get this thing, and I got six sponsors. I've done 90 meetings in 3 days, you know. I'm glad you guys get it, man. That's cool. So I go out and I get in my truck and I crank it and I go to put it in gear and it won't move. I panic, guys. I panic. Because I really thought it was something that I was doing. I really thought that if I missed a meeting that morning that I was going to get drunk and high. I thought somebody was going to come to my house looking for something, and I was going to go with them and get it for them and get high. That's what I believed in my heart. I was terrified. So I call, like, I have this long list of guy numbers, right? Okay. Start here. Hey, man, yeah, I got a... Oh, you can't help me? Okay. Hey, man, I got a... About the sixth person, man, I started getting pissed off. I'm like, these fuckers. Man, they are all talking about wanting to help me, and here I am. I drive everybody to meetings, man, and I'm stuck, and I'm going to get high, and nobody will come and get me. Ah! And I'm freaking out, right? Guys, I'm panicking. I'm freaking out. So I called Jimmy, the guy that I couldn't stand, because, of course, he would answer the phone, right? He's like, hey, man, let me ask you something. Guys, you can't make this shit up. I'm telling you, you can't make this shit up. He's like, hey, let me ask you something. I'm like, yeah. He's like, how do your knees feel? I'm like, oh, man, it hurts so bad, bro. The methadone, I'm still detoxing. My knees hurt. He's like, all right, can you bend them? Guys, I go for a hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, yeah, I can bend it. He's like, all right, cool, man. How are your ankles? I'm like, oh, man, they hurt, too. They're swollen, man. Oh, man. He's like, all right, man, but you can move them. I'm like, yeah. He said, how about your feet? I was like, oh, man, my feet hurt, dude. Y'all know what's coming, right? He said, then put on some fucking shoes and walk. And he hung up on me. I throw my phone, right? I throw my phone, break my phone, so now I don't have a phone. I'm mad as fucking hell, right? And I'm so mad that my dumb ass goes and puts on shoes and I start walking. I'm going to show him. Yeah, you can relate, right? So you can't make this shit up. So I'm walking, right? I'm so mad, and my anger's got me going for a while, right? And then I'm like walking from Salerno, guys, and I'm trying to go to downtown Stewart. I don't know how many of y'all ever detox, but that's a long freaking way to walk when you're you don't have anything in your system, man. I got right there to Walmart, right, and I sit down on the side of the road. Oh, by the way, I had a backup phone, so back then you could take your SIM cards out and put it in, and it was cracked and crappy, but it worked. So I switched phones, and I get to Walmart, and I sit down on the side of the road, and I start crying like a baby. You know, I can't walk any further. It's too far to walk home. I'm stuck in the middle. It's too far to go back. It's too far to keep getting there. I'm legit, you know, just... You know, I just forever victim, man, back then. And I sat there crying, and, you know, God sent an angel, man, and somebody picked me up, and they took me to the meeting, and I went in there, and I sat in that meeting, and I started, oh, man, you know, people in there, nobody said they'll come and get me, and I had to walk. Oh, of course I lied. I had to walk 9 miles to get here. You know, I mean, but to me, that was the truth, right? And, And of course, at that meeting too. All right, that's enough out of you. Oh my God, man! Don't they realize who I am? I will destroy this place. So I go outside and I'm smoking a cigarette, and this dude comes up to me. Man, I don't know his name. He comes up. He's like, "Man, you don't realize that?" I'm like, "Oh, dude, this ain't the time, bro. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the time." He's like, "You don't realize what you did." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Dude." He's like, "I've got 2 years sobriety, man. You were willing to walk 9 miles to stay sober today." It made me really question, what am I willing to do to stay sober today? It didn't even sink in. I was so mad, right? I went down there to the dock, because that's what the guy that I couldn't stand would tell me to do, go sit by the water and, you know, stare at the water and look for the birds and find tranquility. Well, you know, I mean, my mind was chaos, dude. There was no finding tranquility. But I went down there, and it hit me, and I started crying. And I called that guy, and I asked him to be my sponsor, you know, and he didn't shoot no shit with me, man. That guy would not take no shit from me, and I needed that, you know. I needed somebody that was not going to be codependent and baby me and let me be the sponsor and tell them what to do with me. I needed that, desperately needed that. So I'm going to kind of fast forward this, because my recovery story is, you guys, man, it's a miracle that I'm standing here right now. So I got sober, right? 5.5 months into my sobriety, I got arrested. I went to prison sober, having worked the steps and giving back. It does happen. 2 years, I served my prison sentence. I got ready to walk out of prison. I had been in there, you know, preaching AA, starting meetings, doing everything that I was taught to do, man. While everybody around me, I'm living in this horrible, chaotic place. Any of y'all that have been there, I don't need to talk about it. You know it's bad. The TV shows on it are real. It's not a fun place, right? I did my 2 years. I go to the VP. I get ready to go home. The Palm Beach County Sheriff comes and picks me up. I'm like, are you kidding me, God? Like, I finally surrender. I finally give it all over to you. I finally do what you want. Because, of course, guys, I'm so special, right? I don't know the plan that he has for my life, man. So I'm sitting there, and I'm hopeless. And I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go there. They're going to give me time served. They're going to send me home. Well, they don't. I'm going to tell you guys, on January the 3rd, 2015, a judge sentenced me to 8.5 more years in prison. If y'all heard that date, you know that I'm still supposed to be in prison. I know what it is like to be sober, working the steps, and be completely hopeless. To think that my life is over and to have to make a choice. Am I going to continue to live this lifestyle? My daughter, by the way, who's back there sleeping, right? She was going to be 18 years old when I got out. And I'm telling y'all, I was devastated. But I had this program. So many things happened to me while I was in there that I had this program. I had got people that would take their time and come from the free world and come in there and take the time to sponsor me and take the time to listen to me, because I needed that. right? I needed that. And I had this program. This way of life was all I had. I did not have my physical freedom. I could not go to my refrigerator and get what I wanted to eat. I had no control over what was happening. I had no sway over the judge giving me 8.5 years. I went back and I said to my higher power, I said, I have a choice to either follow you and continue to do what, by the way, when I did a third step, I promised him that if he would keep me sober, I would follow him anywhere. This is my exact words. Jimmy can tell you. I will follow you anywhere you take me, and I will always tell people what you did for me. That was a prayer out of desperation, but I meant it. And I had a choice at that moment to continue to give back to people as best as I could and let my higher power use me, or I had a choice to go back in there and become what I knew how to do best, which is what I did the majority of my life. And it was not easy, but I accepted it because this program taught me acceptance, right? On October the 23rd, I had made it to Gainesville to back to prison, I was finally at a work release facility where I could go outside and work, which was much better than where I was before, which was at maximum security prisons, which was not very much fun, controlled everything. And I was grateful for what I had. On October the 23rd, I got a letter from the Palm Beach County Clerk of Courts, and I got a letter from the Department of Corrections. Someone that I did not know met my mother. My mother told her my story. She went out and spent $10,000 for an attorney here in Stuart, Florida, who went to Palm Beach County and appealed my sentence. And on the 23rd, I got goosebumps, guys. I got a letter in the mail from Palm Beach County Clerk of Courts and from Department of Corrections telling me that on December 31st of that year, less than 1 year after I was sentenced to 8.5 years in prison, that I was going to be going home. I did not know any of that was going to happen. I did not do what I was doing because that was going to happen. I did that because the life that I lived before, guys, and you know it if you're sitting in these seats, was a much worse prison than the one that I lived in. I woke up every morning in hell, and I was a slave. I got out of prison, guys. I don't know how much time I got left. Kyle, where are you at? How much time I got left? 10 minutes. All right, I got 10 minutes. Guys, I'm going to rush this, all right? But I know that what came out was supposed to. I got out of prison. Within 6 months, I ruptured my L5 disc. I couldn't walk. I spent a year in recovery from that injury. I recovered from that. God blessed me with a business, guys. I got a relationship with my daughter. I spent a year working. A year and a half ago, I was hit by an F-350 truck. Ran a red light, hit me directly in the driver's doors. My accident report, I was pronounced dead. I spent 6 weeks in the hospital. A year and a half ago, they told me that I would not walk again. They told me if I did, it would be at least 2 years. My entire left leg has metal. I have a fake hip, broken ribs, broken arm, orbital bone, brain damage, ruptured eardrum, the whole nine yards. It took them 2 hours and 45 minutes to cut me out of that vehicle. Right? So this higher power that I thought didn't love me, guys, he wanted me to be able to tell people what he did for me through this program. It did not just happen overnight. I first had to be able to trust another human being long before I could trust a spiritual power, which I did not understand. And let me tell y'all, after I got in that accident, I was not very happy with my higher power. When I was in a wheelchair and didn't think I was going to be able to walk again, I was not very happy with my higher power, guys. You know, and that's just the truth. But the grace of this program, guys, is I'm not high. My greatest fear happened. I was sitting in a hospital, and I had to be put on medication. I didn't have a choice. I'll tell you all a quick story. It's kind of funny, but this is what happened in the emergency room. I'm laying there. They bring me in. I never lost consciousness. I did go into shock, but I never lost consciousness. I'm laying there, and I tell the guy, "Man, I'm a drug addict. You can't give me anything." And I'll never forget, the guy looks at me and goes, "Son, your leg is in a basket next to you." He's like, "We have to give you medication. We got to fix you, right?" And I'm like, "What are you going to give me?" He goes, "Ketamine." And I went, "Oh no, I used to..." Right? right? But I'll tell y'all, and this is the God's honest truth, man, I woke up in that hospital, and for 3 days, with my body broken to pieces, still in shock, I was so scared. I was so scared that that was going to send me back to the life of hell that I lived. I'm telling y'all, I was freaking terrified. And on the third day, man, you know, I hate to say God spoke to me, but something came over me that gave me peace. And what that was something came to me and said, if I brought you to this, son, I will bring you through this. You do everything that you were taught right here. You be honest with your doctors. You be honest with your sponsor. You hold yourself accountable, and I will carry you through this, right? That wasn't a thought that I thought up on my own. I was still in shock, guys. That was a year and a half ago. Now, y'all know, Kyle just told you, I drove 4 hours down here to come share this story with y'all because I believe that it is imperatively important that I tell other people what the higher power that I thought hated me did for me through this program. I will tell y'all one other thing. I did do a lot of outside help. You know, I still go to therapy, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I've done anger management classes. Guys, I was fucked up, man. I've done anger management classes, parenting classes, thinking for changes classes, you know, IOP classes. And this is all in the last 8 years. You know, I did all that stuff before, but I continued to do whatever it is that I need to do for me to mentally be okay so that I do not ever have to go back to that living hell, that prison that we were all in. Depending on how long you've been sober, it may have been days ago and it may have been years ago. But if you think back, man, there is no worse place than waking up a slave. And with the 12 steps right here in this program, lived, not worked, lived. We never have to go back there again. Thanks for letting me share, guys.